The following content is provided by MIT OpenCourseWare under a Creative Commons license. Additional information about our license and MIT OpenCourseWare in general is available at ocw.mit.edu.
Okay, welcome to 257, Nano to Macro Transfer Process. I will use first 10 minutes or so to give you some idea what I'm going to talk about in this course, and then you can decide whether it's the right course for you or not. Okay, the projector is not on yet. Maybe I should try the projector one. Projector. I always feel that this projector needs some time to turn it on, right? That's okay. So, okay. Can you see it from the back? Okay. So, firstly is talk about lens scale. This course, if you look at title, is from nano to macro. So where is the nano? Here, we show Angstrom level, 1 nanometer to millimeter scale. And on the top half, there's this lecture existing biological systems ranging from atoms to proteins to cells. So that's lecture existing. And the bottom half is where the technologies are. So what people can make, what people are making. And you can see a nanometer scale, people are making various kind of nanotubes, nanowires, nanoparticles. That's rapidly developing, and it's becoming the building block for future generation of new materials, new devices. And going up, of course, people are trying to make using the nanowires or nanotubes to make devices. And at this stage, I personal comment is nanotechnology is very hot, and but yet there is not a hot product yet. And we are still waiting to see a big hot product that can make the big investment rewarding. But meanwhile, there are lots of exciting nanoscience. And you will see through this course, I hope, that there are lots of things that at nano scale that's very different from macro scale. And if you see the product-wise, one product that we all use that's really at the nanoscale already, that's those computers. And the computers are built on the CMOS MOSFET devices, for example, this picture from IBM, which made of a source, a drain, and a gate, and the other side is the substrate. So basically, it's a variable resistor. You pass a current from source to drain, and then you use this gate to control the resistance of this MOSFET device. So high resistance, no resistance space, that's on and off. That's what the computer does, one and zero space. And now, of course, you put millions of those transistors onto a chip and to build the board. So technology-wise, on large scale, production scaling is of the order of 0.1 micron. That's 100 nanometer. That's roughly where people like to demarcate the micro and nano. So nanotechnology, often anything below 100 nanometer is called nano. And to me, really, we'll see that at nano scale, the physics start to set on that different from macro scale, and that depends on the situation, depends on the materials, depends on the devices. And this is some of the questions that we address in this course. And one of the objectives that I have is to have you look from continuously from nano to micro and see where nano macro scale theory is not valid, where you have to turn into new theory, where you have to look into new physics. So that's one major objective. And from there, we have to continue to look at from nano to macro. Here I'm giving you some micro examples, and this is a more widely called the MEMS area, microelectromechanical systems. And this is an area that became very hot since the late 1980s. People began to use the microelectronics technology to make other micro devices rather than just microelectronics devices. And here I gave you some example microfluidics and micro tweezers, three-dimensional mechanical structures. And most of those micro devices, sometimes people have heard that, are you dealing with 100 micron, are you dealing with 1 micron, 10 micron, can you still apply the classical theory? So that's one judgment you have to make when you're doing design. Can I pick up the existing theory to do the design? And turns out that for most micro devices, yes, the answer is yes, you can. But there will still why you can and when you cannot. And now you look at the nano devices. Here I give you some examples. So this is the chart for people. It's much more difficult to make. Okay, the micro MEMS devices is taking advantage of existing microfabrication in microelectronics. So a lot of things you can make from existing technology. Nano is much more difficult in terms of making devices. So people are still trying to demonstrate, yes, I can make a simple nano motor. For example, this is attaching a silicon nanowire or metal nanowire onto a biological device. This is ATP, that's the biological motor that drives the motion, for energy transduction. And then attached to a substrate so that you can rotate, demonstrate that yes, you can design a nano motor for whatever purpose. And the reality is, it's hard to think about purpose yet. Okay, it's a demonstration you can make nano machines. And this is other examples where you can use nano tweezers to pick up nano wires, making a nano beam, nano guitar, quantum mechanical vibrations, demonstrating that the fundamental physics at a nanoscale is very different from macro scale. And this is where I feel that lots of people, in addition to me, feel excited. Because once you get to nanoscale, things behave, can behave, not necessarily always behave, very differently from the macro scale. So you can use that to design new materials, or to develop new ideas and devices, and that gives you new opportunities. So this is still a very wide open field, and it really needs the both ingenuity and the knowledge. And what I'm doing in this course is to provide with knowledge. You guys are very smart, so I hope by these two combinations, you will make something happening in the nano world. And so why nano is exciting? I'm a professor in mechanical engineering. I come to the energy area. Let's just think about energy, nano for energy. In this specific course, I talk a lot about thermal energy transport, but also I have in mind that the transport, for example, electrons, not just necessary only for the energy area. But let's just think about giving some example why nano could change the energy picture. And really, if you think about energy, what's energy? Energy are the, carried by electrons in the material, molecules, photons, or the atom vibration, the photons. And then you look at the characteristic length of those energy carriers. The characteristic length, including the wavelength and the mean free path. Those are concepts that I'm going to explain in the course. But let's just think wavelength, any material, any matter has both wave and power characteristics, so we can associate it with the wavelength. And here I'm giving you the numbers. So wavelengths are photons. Visible light, what's the visible light wavelength? Yeah, so it's about 0.5 half micron, right? So so photon is actually really the area that people have done a lot of engineering, because 0.5 micron is actually very long compared to nano, when you want to go to nano scale. And electrons, the wavelength is much shorter, it's of the order of 100 angstrom, or 10 nanometer. And the lattice vibration wavelength is even shorter because the atoms are heavier. And so that's one characteristic lens, that's the wavelength. So if you have structure that's comparable to this wavelength, what you're going to do is to change the shape of the wave. You have wave reflection, you have wave interference, and that can change fundamentally the energy level in the material. So here I'm giving some examples. These are so-called quantum dots. You make a very small particles, and it turns out that the energy level of electrons are changed, and you can make efficient light absorbers for photon energy absorption, so you match the electron energy to the photon energy by doing the size, changing the size. You can think about using different size of this particle to absorb a different spectrum of light, and thus you can do more efficient, theoretically efficient, photovoltaic energy conversion, right? And the other example here is again using photons as example, showing three-dimensional structures where by using a different design of the structure. The structure typically less than 1 micron, but larger than 0.1 micron. So it's not exactly in that sense. Length scale is not nano. A lot of people still characterize this in the nano regime because they are changing fundamental properties. And by doing this so-called photonic crystal, you can control the emission out of these structures. So control, tailor which wavelength range you want the structure to emit. And take a simple example, when you use incandescent light bulb, right? And you pass current, you heat it up, you don't want to emit the radiation that you cannot see. You want the only visible radiation emitted so that you can take advantage of the electricity to light conversion for the illumination purpose. So, some of this we're using for thermal photovoltaic energy conversion. And the bottom picture, this is actually the atomic image of some multi-layer structures, so-called super lattice structures. So this is the dimmer region is one layer, the brighter region is another layer. In fact, this is a germanium silicon repeating structure with 4 nanometer repeating distance. And it turns out in this case, we could use this structure to significantly control the thermal properties. People have been using this structure to control the electron properties to make more efficient lasers. We can use this similar structure to control the thermal property, and that turns out to be, in control in the sense we can reduce the thermal conductivity. And it turns out it's very bad for lasers because the heat cannot go out, but it also is very good for other applications like energy conversion. We do a thermal to electrical energy conversion, thermal electricity, that's what we want. So we are working very heavily in this kind of nanostructures for energy conversion. And I come back to more on the transfer examples. This is coming to heat transfer examples. So again, I'm talking about MOSFET. The electron going from source to the drain, and this channel now is about 90 nanometer. That's what the industry makes. Okay, that's what we buy out of market. And every few years you change the computer because they are making this channel smaller. They are packing more devices on the same chip. And it turns out this is a Monte Carlo simulation by IBM. When the electron flows through this device, they dump most of the heat, the energy as heat on this side, on the drain side. And that's about 10 nanometer region that when they dump their heat. So how this heat is going out? How you can you still use the Fourier heat conduction theory to model the device? And the answer is definitely no, you cannot do that, and we'll see the tools later on through the course. And this is another example of this multi-layer structure I showed before. People use it to make lasers, and this is actually a laser for my collaborator made. And again, it's very good from an electronic point of view, but when you think about how heat can come out, it becomes a nightmare because this multi-layer, in fact, is effectively impeding the heat flow. So none of this device, we have to put a cryogenic cooler to operate it. And so those are more like a detrimental effects of nanostructure to device operation. But you can also think about the positive aspects. If you look at your display, the hard drive in computer, it's flying at this stage the distance from the slider to the magnetic disk is between 10 to 20 nanometers. So you are using the nanotechnology. This distance, 10 to 20 nanometers, is much smaller than the mean free path of air molecules at atmospheric pressure. So the industry has been using various kind of size effect correction to modify their model, but still, it turns out at this stage, the model has a 1 to 2 nanometer uncertainty problem. And that problem, 1 to 2 nanometer seems to be nothing, but once you get a 10 nanometer, that's 20% uncertainty, and they are worried about it. And why you want small? Because when you make it smaller, the magnetic field doesn't extend much. You can interact with the small dots on the disk, so to write a smaller region. And well, this is not the only way. For example, IBM is trying to think about putting millions of atomic force can universe to heat up a local region to do the thermal writing. So can you take advantage of the nanoscale effect to write a smaller spot? And in theory, yes. And people actually have been exploring those possibilities. So those are some examples in heat transfer. And in materials making, again, a lot of transport problems. Here I'm showing you some materials. For example, this nano wire is actually just by pressure injecting molten bismuth into nano channels and then solidify it to make a nano wire. And there are lots of issues if you really want to look at the transport process, how you can get a continuous wire, because some of the, they're also weaker pieces. People condense wafer in the nano channel, and you can look at this, not all the wires will be continuous. If you can solve some of those technological issues by looking at the transport process. Or this is a nano wires made out of wafer condensation. Just see very simple, actually, very simple furnace there, and the evaporation first and condense under light conditions method. And most of this right now is at the stage of trial and error. If you got a better idea what's the right condition to make it, you may be more successful in converting this into useful devices. And so those are some examples. What are the nano and transport? And what we want to emphasize is how nano is different from micro. And what are the regimes you will encounter once you go to nano? So here I'm giving you, for example, when we have to consider transport as waves, because I was talking about the wavelength of photons, and electron has wavelengths, photon has wavelengths, even molecule has wavelengths. Okay. So when we have to consider wave characteristics, when we do need to consider wave characteristics, but even when we don't need to consider wave characteristics, there are still various kind of size effects. And most of you, I think, learned the laws in the bottom line. You learned Ohm's law, you learned Fourier law, you learned Newton shear stress law. And some of you may be familiar with the electromagnetic wave or photon transport, So some of you probably are familiar with this line. And what I would like to give you a picture is how you go from this to here, and then those, the other objective is to see that those different fields. So electrical engineering probably deal with the electrons most of the time, and we do molecules and mechanical engineering. But one of my objectives is to show that they are not very much different. Okay, they are very similar once they get to fundamental level. And you can start from the same equation, Boltzmann equation, you can derive Newton shear stress law, you can derive Fourier law, Ohm's law. Okay? So lots of discipline, that's another objective here. The boundaries is what we created ourselves. And that creation started from early to middle 90s, right? The last century, when we discipline began to be divided between different fields, and the people start to develop their own fields. So as we move into nano, one of my beliefs is you need to be multidisciplinary, or really in better, more exact definition, interdisciplinary. Multidisciplinary means you work with other people in another discipline, and the interdisciplinary is yourself, is you know different disciplines. And you will be using a book that has still been published. I make copies, I brought 10 copies because I was looking at registration less than 10 people. So this today I only want those registered pick up the copies, and maybe later on I next time I will put into the copy shop, and you can pick up. So this is a book in progress. It's if you look at it, this is a already typeset version, but they are sending me. I'm making last round of correction. So their goal is to have it out by the end of the year. By the end of this course, you'll get loose copies, corrected one, and you can decide whether you will you will buy a full copy afterwards. So but this is my idea of teaching transport. Okay, particularly I have an inclination for thermal energy transport. So when I talk about energy transport, I first will tell you what are the energy. What is really the energy in any materials? Okay, and those are allowable from quantum mechanical principles, and that's a common knowledge among all the fields. Physicists talk about materials engineering, talk about electrical engineering, talk about it, and then we'll see where the thermal energy began to come into picture, where the temperature begins to enter into the picture. And that's the statistical thermodynamics. So the first one is quantum mechanics, solid states. It's almost every chapter is one course. Sometimes it depends on what department you are in, a one-year course or two-year course. So my goal is very ambitious. I'm going to teach you, if you look at syllabus, quantum mechanics in 1 week. Okay? Statistical thermal. So those are the really, to me, are the backgrounds you need to deal with transport, nano transport. And the other chapters are more really on the transport side. So this transport by waves, you can really think of them more like sometimes you think of as a quantum transport. A lot less necessarily all waves have to be in the quantum form. Electromagnetic wave is you don't have to do quantization to deal with the transport process. So that's one of the hope is some of you may be familiar with some of those waves. And this is the one question I have. I want to pause this. I want to really say what's the background and what you might be familiar with. So my assumption is you don't know much, okay? If you look at the course prerequisite, I put down 2.5 thermal heat thermodynamics and thermal fluid area. I'm hoping that you might be familiar with some of even if you're electrical engineer, you may be familiar with the electron transport, and by making that analogy, you can learn transport of other type of energy carriers. And I'm going to cover my when I teach this course before, depends on how much time I spend in these first three chapters. Okay? And most of the time I just stop here. I couldn't do more than that. But this time I am determined I'm going even faster on the first three chapters. Okay? So that I have more time. I was debating whether I want to cover energy conversion versus liquid. I can do transport of all the energy carriers, molecules, gas molecules, electrons, photons, in a parallel fashion until when I come to liquid. Liquid becomes more elastic. I can't deal it in a parallel fashion. So I have a separate chapter here. I was debating myself this chapter or this chapter, and at the end I put this chapter. But I'm open, and that's why I'm passing that questioner to see what will be your interest area. So that is the what this course is about. Let me just say a few words about the logistics, the syllabus. Okay, let me turn this off. I'm not going to use it anymore. So if you look at we have detailed a weekly schedule, and I'm hoping that I can stick to it. We'll have weekly homework assignment and two midterms, no final. The midterm I'm planning, one is in class, the other is take-home, and then one final project. Like I said, the textbook, my current plan is, depends on how many students eventually I have, either put it, take to the classroom, make Xerox copy myself, or put it into the copy pack, you go to pay the copy fee. If it's too many, I just couldn't do that out of the resources I have. And please pay attention to the website. So, because you can see there are a few people here trying to help me set up this course for OpenCourseWare. So we're going to put the notes, typewritten notes onto the web. And if this one works well, we're going to put my voice on the web, although very heavy accent. Actually, lots of schools are interested in teaching this course, and there's no such a book on the market, and many people have taught it. So my idea is really to put it on web so people can at least benefit from my own personal experience in teaching the course. And other than that, my office hour is Monday after the lecture, 1.5 hours, so it's from 2:30 to 4 o'clock. And the homework is due on Wednesday, so I'm hoping that at least you take a look, doing your homework during the weekend, and you have questions, you can come to me on Monday to answer the questions. I do have volunteer TA, Arvind Narayana Swami. I have to work out because he's volunteering his time to see whether he can set up any office hour, but he'll be helping me a lot. And I have a list of recommended books reading, although if you look at my book, you read my book, I hope you all have patience reading my book. It's 5-year work, okay? To this stage, 5-year work. And maybe by the end of December, it's a 5.5 year. And, you also have to realize that I have a lot of struggle in writing that book. Because how much material I'm going to put there. As I said, each of this course, the chapter there is very often 1 year, one semester, or more than 1 year course. So I have a lot of struggle, and my plan is during the lecture, I'm doing as little math as I can. But when you actually read the book, you'll definitely have a lot more math. And you have to make your decision how much you want to get into the mathematics. Okay. And then those additional textbook reference I listed, I have not put onto the resume, but I'm going to do it. I was not successful in this morning finding out how to do it on web. And then I'm going to suggest every week there is at least one paper you have to read. I'm going to give a list of papers, but during this weekly homework assignment, I'm going to point out the one paper I want you to read and write a comment on the paper. And the first paper is one that everybody should read, even though you decide not to take your course. That's a famous lecture in very famous lecture in 1956. There's plenty of room at the bottom. That's you want to see that how people see his visionary, and put that lecture in context. At the time, the integrated circuit that was just invented, the few devices in the integrated circuit, okay? And the laser was only theoretically possible at the time. So, and he was able to imagine a lot of things that's happening now. So you got to read that paper. And that's what all I want to say in terms of syllabus. And any questions here? Okay. If not, let me start by asking you to shoot at me. Because we're talking about transport. So I want to tell you, you to tell me what kind of transport laws that you are familiar with. Okay, well, equations, right? Engineering, every discipline I have there, more like a starting, governing equations. Please, I talked too much already. Okay, first one, Fourier law of heat conduction. Somebody familiar with heat transfer? Morphic. I'm dragging you to you that I'm going to cover all these laws you tell me. Okay, so think about something. Maybe I can. I'll tell you. Challenge me now. Mass and momentum conservation. Yes, we're actually going to derive it. Well, you can see, I still can't see I can derive the conservation equations. But I'm going to show actually you can start with from some basic equation to derive, for example, Levi-Strauss equation, not using the actual what we typically do, the mass balance, take a control volume, write down the mass balance. You can do that. You can derive with it. Tell me more. Diffusion equation. Well, the mass six law. Okay? That's easy. Okay? Tell me more. Newton transport? What? Newton. Newton what? Newton has so many things. Newton's shear stress law. Newton, that we can show how to... sorry? Newtonian mechanics. Oh, gosh. If they ask me to do the... No, I'm not going to do the Newtonian. Well, we're still going to use F equals MA. Okay. I'm not doing the derivation of F equals MA. No. Tell me more. 来下下汤完了。嗯？Hold on, that's amazing. You said you can punk slow. Okay. Show me more. No electrical engineers? No Ohm's law? Huh? I'm telling you, the Ohm's law is the same as Newton's shear stress law, same as the Fourier law. Same crazy. But it is the same. And even if you go to software, some package, right? You can use the same software to solve electrostatic equation as you solve heat capacity equation. Okay, so any other? Let's put another field. So this is my topic 3, classical laws. We already heard few, so let me just write this down. Heat transfer. This is a review, okay? Some of you may be familiar with one, some with the other, or if you're a mechanical engineer, maybe you know the most. So, heat transfer, we typically talk about three heat conduction. In which is Q equals minus K gradient X, right? Or if I write in the one dimension K dT dx. So this, we have the Fourier law. And let me just be a little bit careful here, so I write down the unit. Heat flux Q and K is thermal conductivity. So thermal conductivity is a material property, and the unit is watt meter Kelvin, right? And this is the gradient operator. And so this is the heat conduction, and we also learn convection, which is Newton's law of cooling, right? Newton's law of cooling tells you if I have a fluid flow over a surface, if the water temperature is at TW and the ambient temperature is TA, then the Newton's law of cooling is H TW minus TA. And if you are familiar with the convection heat transfer, you know that this is very often more or less cheating because we can't really calculate H so easily. So you either use empirical relation or you go to solve the Levi-Strauss equation, right? So that's the convection in the field of convection. And one thing that we will discuss is in the dealing with convection process, we often assume the long sleep boundary condition, right? So one of the fundamental assumptions we use in continuum is that either wall, so we have a velocity of the fluid. Let's say if this is the y direction and this is the x direction, so velocity of the fluid equals either y equals 0 or equal to 0. This is if the wall is stationary. That's the so-called long sleep. The molecules is sticking to the wall. And then you see, as they also the same y equals 0, the temperature is also long sleep, so the temperature equals the wall temperature. So those are the fundamental assumptions we use in the continuum regime. And once you go to nano or micro, very often people say, no, you have to add sleep to the fluid. There's a difference between fluid velocity and the wall velocity. And we will see when and where that comes from. And in fact, I'm claiming even in the continuum, there is a sleep, but it's just too small. Okay? So you can basically essentially assume there's no sleep. But we'll see why. Okay? And so this is if I make a further comment back to conduction, the thermal conductivity is typically thought as a mature property. But once you get to nano, you'll see the thermal conductivity is no longer a mature property. I can give you a different structure that may have different thermal conductivity. And in fact, I cannot use those equations. Okay, we have to start with a different equation. And then let's look at the radiation. So radiation, we learned the Planck's law. Okay? A lot of radiation probably has to respect it. That's the origin of quantum mechanics, modern physics. Okay? Planck is a very big name. He helped Einstein to his status. Okay? Einstein was just a patent clerk when Planck was the head of Max Planck. At the time, it was not called Max Planck Institute. Okay? Einstein submitted papers to him, and he was able to recognize this valuable paper and publish it. Planck also won Nobel Prize for his famous Planck's law, that black body emission from an object is, I'm writing this as a simple, you can look at the coefficients, what's the value. Now later on, I will show you that you can derive those coefficients. So this is the Planck's law as a function of wavelength, temperature, right? And if you plot the Planck's distribution, black body emission as a function of wavelength, and the peak here is lambda t, this equals 2898 micron Kelvin. So the solar surface temperature is about 5600 Kelvin. 5600, 3000 divided by 5, or 5, 3000 divided by 5000, right? That's where the peak solar radiation is. And that's why we are sensitive to visible. Okay? You can look at another different planetary system, if there are indeed creatures, intelligent creatures, it may be different, it may be sensitive to different wavelengths. Just the natural evolution. And if you integrate this, you get the total, all the area underneath it. That's the black body total emission, sigma t fourth power, and this is the Stefan-Boltzmann law. So Stefan-Boltzmann law, law is easy to show once you know how to derive Planck's law. And then we will be able to see the derivation of Planck's law after chapter 3. Okay, the chapter after chapter 4. And it's very natural to come. It's very similar to actually the specific heat. Okay, so we're making connections. Specific heat of object, you see. What's the relation with Planck's law? But you can easily write Planck's law in the same way you can write specific heat or vice versa. Okay, so that's radiation, and of course, just a black body, if you have an object that's not black, we define emissivity as E divided by ET, the ratio of actual emissive power divided by the black body emissive power. So those are the, if we write the radiation heat transfer between two surfaces, right? Simplest geometry. I have two parallel plates. I mean, most of the time, I'm giving simplest geometry. And both surfaces are black. So macro scale, I will write, okay, this is temperature T1, this is temperature T2. I will write the heat transfer between these two surfaces as the temperature difference plus power. Temperature force power, the difference of temperature force power. That's just the Stefan-Boltzmann law. How much radiation is going this way, that's sigma T1 force power. How much radiation going the other way, sigma T2 force power. The difference gives me then that's heat transfer. So that's what the macro scale. And then what I'm going to show in chapter 5 is that this is the tip of the maximum you can get. When macro scale, we see pad body here, is maximum. But once you get to nano scale, this is no longer maximum. You can break this. Okay? You're not breaking the fundamental quantum mechanics. The principle there, once you get to there, is very clear. Okay. And then I make another comment is, this is radiation. We keep assuming radiation is very different from heat conduction problems, right? It's two different type of problem. One problem, heat conduction is a differential equation, and radiation is in this case, simple difference equation. And once you get to nanoscale, heat conduction becomes very similar to radiation. Okay? You will see why once we get to more details. So that's the those are few laws that we learned in the summer area. Now let me move on to other laws that's mentioned. So we see Newton's shear stress. And this is in fluid mechanics. If I have smooth flow and any plane, I look at the shear stress, tau xy, this is the x direction, this is the y direction, and I can write tau xy equals mu du dy. This is a very simple form. You can write more complicated form as you want, but I'm giving you only simplest example here, right? So the viscosity, dynamics with dynamic viscosity, and unit is a Newton meter square second. And like I said, I will show that those can be derived, and also we'll see some derivation when this becomes invalid to nanoscale, whether this is a scale valid or a nanoscale. And we mentioned Fick's law. Fick's law of mass diffusion. If you have a mass concentration difference in the medium, we know there's a mass diffusion. In the mass diffusion, the mass flux Jm, I'm writing very simple one in one dimension, is density times diffusivity times the mass fraction of CCI and the dx. So even if you look at, this is the equation of the CCI. So even if you just look at the equation, right, it's very similar to the Fourier law. And in fact, except for the case of radiation, the Fourier law, the Newton shear stress law, and the mass diffusion, all are differential equations, the local derivative, right? Depends on local derivative of temperature, local derivative of velocity, local derivative of the mass concentration. And you can write one more of this type of equation, that's the Ohm's law. Okay, let's write down the Ohm's law. So, and Ohm's law, I don't know how familiar you are, but probably the one that you are familiar is resistance equals voltage drop divided by current, right? And that's not a differential form. This is more like you write the thermal resistance and the heat flux relation. That's the say thermal analogy to the electrical network. And if you write more in differential form, so the current flux J, let me just put a E, like a charge, and it's proportional to the electric conductivity to the electric field. Right? So the electric conductivity and the electric field is proportional to the potential gradient. So this is minus Q minus E and d phi dx, and this phi is the energy. This is the unit of joule energy. Okay, I divide by Q or the charge of electron. That's they give me electrostatic field. So I can write this as mass d by electrostatic dx. Static potential. Okay, this is just an energy potential, but very often in electricity we talk about electrostatic potential. That's normalized the charge. Okay, so the charge, the electrostatic potential difference is the voltage you measure. Okay, so from here you can write down this, the voltage difference, you integrate, here is the unit, is the ampere square. And the electric conductivity unit is ohm meter inverse, or sometimes people write Siemens per meter. Okay, so those are the laws that we mentioned, and here I'm distinguishing those laws from somebody mentioned the momentum conservation, energy conservation. Those are the, if you look at it, it tells the constitutive relation between the potential versus the flux, between heat flux and temperature difference. Temperature difference in that case is the potential. So potential flux. So you have two unknowns, right? So those are the constitutive equations. Equations, and it is this constitutive relations that will most likely become questionable their applicability to nanoscale. The conservation equations, the mass conservation, energy conservation, will always be applicable. Okay, and but those relations that I listed, you can question them, and they, of course. The two questions: when they become breakdown, when they cannot be applied. Okay, and in addition, when we solve problems, when we solve heat transfer problems, we don't just use those equations. So we use energy conservation, or when we solve fluid mechanics problem, we add the momentum conservation. So we couple those constitutive equations with the conservation equations to solve problems. Right, and I can derive, for example, from Boltzmann equation, Navier-Stokes equation, some like a momentum conservation equation. The principle of momentum conservation is independent of which equation derived from. That's always valid. Okay, so those I mean, keep writing down any of those conservation equations. You'll see it in chapter 6 when we show how to derive it. Okay, so those are the classical laws, and I want to make one digression. The emphasis I have been placing on is what's the difference between nano and macro, right? But there is another intermediate regime that a lot of times when we deal with small devices, the classical laws are still valid. You can use it. But it's just the behavior of the device will be very different from macro devices. And this is because once you make things small, the volume versus surface change. The relative importance of volume to surface changes, and so you got a different behavior of the sound effects that's not important in macro objects become important in the micro devices. So let me briefly talk about this scaling trend. And you can scale any of the things you have learned. You can take any the computer mechanics thing. Well, if you make the size small, surface area more, how does the stress and the force change? And clearly, when we go to macro to micro, the volume versus surface area, you say, let's just take a sphere, right? And sphere, the volume is 3-4 pi per cubic, area is 4 pi r square, so we have 1/3 r. So as I make r smaller and smaller, the relative importance of volume becomes small. So volumetric effects, that means, for example, the gravitational force becomes less important, but surface force becomes more important. Let me take one more concrete number. Let's just think about sphere, okay? Again, the sphere, I put it into a water surface. And the sphere, the water surface has a surface tension, okay? So it has a gravitational force, which is mg. And when it experiences also the surface tension, and the surface tension is the surface tension is something we discussed in chapter 9. And so the surface force or surface tension times the perimeter, so L, where the liquid and the solid surface is in contact. So let me take the ratio of this surface force, volume force to surface force. And volume force, so gamma volume force is mg surface force sigma times L, and mg is what? Density times 3-4 pi r cubic, gravitational acceleration, and sigma L, let me just approximate it as 2 pi r, right? See, that's the maximum parameter. Okay? And so you can see in this case, this ratio becomes 3 to r squared rho g sigma. And you know, rho, let's take roughly 1,000 kilogram per cubic meter. Sigma, I take water, is about 78 newton per meter. Okay, plug in this number, millinewton. Plug in this number and try it out. Okay, so if this is gamma, that's R. So R is 1 meter. And this ratio, you will find out gamma is, gamma is 8.4. 10 to the 4th power, no problem, right? Surface for surface tension to 1 meter ball on a water surface. But then, putting 1 millimeter. Put R equals 1 millimeter, then gamma equals 6 order magnitude smaller, right? It's a square, so 0.084. Surface force become dominant. So a plant doesn't care if we drop a lot of table, but it cares a lot if it's trapped in a drop of water. Right? So this that's the change of the relative importance once you get to this ratio change, surface area volume ratio change. And this becomes much more severe, much more pronounced once you go to nano, right? Because that R is 10 to the minus 8, 10 to the minus 9 order magnitude. And surface area becomes huge. So a lot of chemical engineers use nano and in the catalysis. chemical reaction, increase the chemical reaction because your surface area changed tremendously. And so a lot of those effects are geometrical effects, and which I'm not going to emphasize much. We're going to look more from the fundamental transport physics aspects. And so that's the scaling. And now I'm going to turn into some discussion on the microscopic picture. So to look at the nano, macro, or micro transport, we need to look at the microscopically how the really those carriers are moving from one place to the other. And once you start looking at the microscopic picture, the similarity of different subjects that I just listed become very apparent. For example, when I talk about the heat conduction of electrons, it's just the electron moving from place one place to the other, that's the charge motion. So associated with this charge motion, electrical engineer just interested not in the energy they carry, they're interested in how much charge is moving from one place to the other. So so that's one way to think why we need to look at the transport from a microscopic point of view. And let me just give a very quick introduction, and of course we will talk about this extensively in this course. So here, microscopic pictures of energy carriers. And again, we have listed heat, electricity, mass. So let me start with the heat. And let's do the heat conduction first. Think about how really heat is conducted from one place to the other. And if I just draw a simple air molecule example, I have a box of air molecules. Forget about the convection, okay? Let me claim that I can maintain the system so that applies the convection process. So this is the hot side, this is the cold side, right? So what's the heat conduction process? How the heat, this cold side is the temperature of the wall. How the heat goes through the air molecule from the hot to the cold side? Somebody tell me. Okay? Momentum transport. Okay. So through the momentum transfer, is the molecule moving or not? By collision, yes. Or the statement that right, the molecule is moving, but it's moving randomly. Right? So those molecules are moving randomly, so it can move this way, it can move this way, right? And let's say if the molecule happened to move this way, it collided with the hot wall, it gets higher energy, higher velocity. The average velocity is zero, but those molecules are moving very fast. Those average molecules move about 500 to 800 meters per second, believe it or not. Okay, in this room, every molecule, most molecules, move at that speed. And so those molecules collide with the wall, and you can think about the microscopically, the just like a two peanut ball, collide with each other, they will, if this one has a higher energy, they will pass some of the energy to the molecule. So those molecules bounce back, and they will have a chance to collide with other molecules. Of course, again, there, because of so many, the direction is random, but because average speaking, those molecules collide, have more chance to collide with the other world, this layer has higher energy, higher velocity. And that will pass to the next layer by, because we said some molecules move this way, some move the towards the wall. So they will pass that excess energy to the next layer of molecules, and that cascade process eventually comes to this cold region where those molecules will do their job. If you get a higher density of particles, you get I think at a macroscopic scale, you get more particles, but you get a shorter distance to travel. Okay, that depends on how long it goes. With each of these particles, how long they travel between they collide with the next layer, okay? And you will see later on that thermal conductivity of gas molecules actually do not depend on pressure at the macroscopic. It depends on temperature. It doesn't depend on pressure. Yes.
What is wrong with a picture of a vibrating hot wall which has an average zero momentum? How can it still transfer net momentum to the right, to the left?
Well, there's nothing wrong. What are you looking at is the time averaging, right? Time averaging wise, it is there's no net motion, so zero average momentum, but once you go to the sine picture, each atom is vibrating. So every time they collide, there is this small amount of energy exchange. Do I answer your question?
Maybe I'm losing my thing, but if air molecule happens to collide with a small molecule and the wall molecule is on the way back,
The air molecule, please repeat, I was thinking about whether this was working or not. Please repeat.
When the wall molecule is coming back,
right.
And the air molecule happens to bounce, to collide at that moment, it should be slowed, but at the same amount, it should be accelerated if it moves forward.
Well, I see your picture there, but the average speaking, right? Average speaking, this place has a higher, larger amplitude than this side, right? So average speaking, that lag transfer will favor some energy goes this way. Other questions? Yes, let me do one by one. Yes.
When we talk about uncertainty,
this one?
Yes.
You are all very curious at this stage. I'm not justifying that fixed boundary condition. I'm just saying the average picture. You can. The basic picture is you can. If you do molecular dynamics, for example, you can put a hot wall there. There's atoms vibrating. You have the gas molecule just do the collision. Once the molecule hit this atom, what's the collision? And the average speaking, you'll find out that doesn't happen. Okay. Yes, there's another one.
You said that air molecules move at 500 to 800 meters per second.
Right.
That's kind of defined to see the sound at half of that, right?
Uh-huh.
How does that relate?
It roughly has a one-third square root relation. Okay, so it's going, okay, the speed of sound is going one direction, and this molecule average speed is going three-dimensional. So that's why the square root one-third comes, I'm just showing at that, yeah. Yes.
If you gave all those a charge, would you get a feedback effect from that model?
Yes.
Does it actually work when you scale the mic? Is it actually the voltage independent of light?
Voltage independent of...
Is it
a material, right? Well, yeah, the feedback voltage is independent then, because of the feedback coefficient times the temperature difference.
Yeah, but does that work for that model? Can you actually do that?
I did not try myself. I believe you can.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's good. I want to be attacked. Okay. And this is the gas molecule. Let's move to what I'm saying is part of this electron will probably be a shocker if I say electron is the same as gas molecule. Okay. So let's look at this is a gas. I'm saying now I look at crystals. Okay, crystals are made of atoms in a light fashion. They just periodically arrange into beautiful whatever crystal. Just look at how crystal, right? Very regular arrangement of atoms. So the atomic distance is about 2 or 3 angstroms between atoms. And if you have, so electrons in a crystal, there are some electrons. We'll see what are those electrons later on. There's some electrons just come off the host atom. And they become free, they become really collected owned by all these atoms, in theory. Okay? And it turns out, although the atom atomic distance is about 2 to 5 angstrom, 4.5 angstroms there, the electron in this, you tend to think that electron can really just go a few angstrom, they will hit a lot of atoms, right? Just the classic picture. If you think about it, you have a dense, harsh media, you shoot another particle through, you will hit another media quickly. But what's amazing is that this electron can hop in quite a long distance, few hundred, sometimes even few thousand angstroms. They don't hit the other atoms until eventually will hit and be scattered by this atom. So so because they can go a long distance, and effectively say those atoms is more like creating occasional disturbance to that motion. So create some electron we call scatter. So effectively those electrons in the crystal, very often I can just make a model and say those are electrons moving randomly in the crystal. And I scare out those background atoms and say occasionally they create a scatter. So this is become to, again, so-called free electron gas. Very similar to those molecular gas. And that you can start to see that I say there's a lot of similarity between the molecules and the say electron transport. And so that's the this electron part. And once you have this free electron gas, free electron gas model, you can use a similar analogy. This is a T hard, T code. The electron collide on this side, again, higher energy and like terminal cascade process as the gas molecules. Now I'm making a next jump. That's the atom vibration. And I will say again, it's similar to this picture. And that's that leads to a little bit more argument. And this argument will not be very rigorous. It has always been in first class, right? So, again, I think about the, so in metals, it's the electron that is dominant heat conduction, okay? This is because the electron move very fast. Their speed is typically 10 to the 7, 10 to the, let me just be careful, think. It's 10 to the 5 to 10 to the 6 meter per second. Okay? Electron speed in the metal. Okay? And now let's look at the, again, the dielectric. Yeah, I don't have those free electrons inside. So I have those atoms inside. And I want to say at the end, those atoms, in terms of heat transfer, it again come to a picture similar to that gas molecule model, similar to the free electron gas model. And to do that, let me first see what holds this crystal together. What holds the crystal together? Why the atom just doesn't go off? Let's think about the simplest case. Let's just think about the salt crystal. This is I have potassium, I have chloride. So the potassium electron goes to chloride, and this is a negative charge. So after negative charge, you got an electrostatic attraction force there, right? So they have attraction force. Why do not they do not collapse onto each other? If I have because every atom has a nucleus, right? A nucleus is positive charge. And once the two nucleus come too close, they will repulse each other. And even they say not just nucleus, because that electron is only one electron, there are more electrons inside. So when the electron clouds begin to overlap, they also repulse each other. So typically, the interatomic potential is this as a function of distance. This is R. This is interatomic potential. And force between the atoms is negative gradient of potential. This is always right potential force relation. Once you know potential, you know force. Okay. So when the distance separation is half in this region, is the attractive force. This is the attraction. And once they are close, it is the repulsion. And it turns out the thermodynamics point of view, the most stable is the energy is minimum. So that's where the equilibrium position is. The atoms in the crystal are stable because that's their minimum energy state. Okay, and because of this, so effectively there is a force interaction. If they are out of equilibrium, out of this because there is thermal motion there, they will move around this point. So if I just make I write this way, d phi dx, one dimensional, simple, make it simpler. Look simpler. And this effectively gives me the force interaction is like a string constant times delta x. But this delta x is the motion from equilibrium, how far away they move away from the equilibrium. Right? Approximately. I'm approximating this curve by the gradient by a simple linear spin model. So if they move away, the spin will push back. Okay, so in that model, I'm collecting more my atoms in the crystal by spin. So you can collect all this. So a web of springs is the starting model I have for this crystal. So what happens if I have the web of springs? This side is hot, this side is cold. Let me don't think about hot or cold. Just to see a drum there, right? You lock at one point, that drum will start vibrating. So the same thing. Any point, the atom, if you pull it, that will generate waves of this is the acoustic wave if it's a visible audible range, right? Okay? But if inside crystal, this could be very high frequency one. You cannot hear it. but it's still those waves. So what happens is, if this is a hot, this is a cold, on the hot side, the vibrational amplitude is larger, so you generate the waves that propagate to the other side. And the similar cold generate waves. But the difference is that because there is more to from one direction to the other. But I'm doing a little bit cheating. This wave doesn't go that long. It's not like acoustic wave you can hear pretty far. Inside solid, it just travel very short distance, a few hundred angstrom to a few thousand angstrom, they will be scattered. So what happens, because my typical object is a millimeter, meter, much longer than that distance. So what happens is these waves will be scattered. And then you, one more principle. Here I'm making layers of argument, which I will explain later in more detail, okay? So one more principle is quantum mechanics. Turns out those waves are not purely just say wave with wavelengths. It also has momentum, it has energy, quantized energy, and that's some kind of particle picture, and wave quantum mechanical wave particle picture. So through layers of argument, but that I have to wait until chapter 5 I explain detail. And you will see that this, say, waves in quantum form of those waves is called a photon. Just like electromagnetic wave quantum form is called a photon. Okay? And those photon waves in the end, because they are heavily scattered, I can really approximate the heat conduction just as a photon particle. I can forget about that wave just like a photon as when I deal with radiation. Most of the time I don't do the electromagnetic wave. I just see this ray going from this place to the other. I see this photon going from one photon from one place to another, heat another photon. And with that picture I come back to this so-called photon gas picture. Okay. And again, here, let me just say I'm making layers of argument, which I will hopefully explain in more detail. And with all those gas pictures, the heat conduction in solid and gas becomes very similar. And you can think about the other transport, charge transport, because electrons going is essentially also just a charge transport. I think I have to stop, but you can ask me later, after class. Okay. I would like you to still register, pick up a copy of the chapter, and if you, there are more, I'll see lessons to how many I'll bring other. And I passed around the flyer asking how much you know, what do you want to learn? If you could, give me the feedback. If you don't have time to give to me, send to me next week, Monday, and so I can tailor my lecture better.